Hello everyone and welcome to episode 595 of So You Want to Be a Writer, the podcast that's all about writing and publishing. My name's Valerie Koo. I'm CEO of the Australian Writers Centre, the world's leading centre for writing courses, and I'm your host. What have you been up to this week? I've been gearing up for Easter, right? I mean, who doesn't love a long weekend? And I've decided this year to actually schedule in some relaxing. I know, actually scheduling it into my diary. Why? Because I'm always deluded enough to think, oh, I have 4 whole days. I'm going to make a list of all the things that I want to tick off. Look, I know. My friends say to me, you know, why don't you just not have anything on your list? And, you know, while that might be great advice, the reality is that I just can't help myself and I'm always putting stuff on my list of things to do. So instead of having nothing on my list, which is really just unrealistic for me, I'm going to block out time for being really industrious and block out time, sort of like as a to-do list item, for sitting around and doing nothing or watching Netflix or watching YouTube or, you know, whatever it is that I feel like doing. I'm also gearing up for our Easter sale. This is huge. So are you ready for it? I have personally organized a very important special for you guys. If you go to the sales page, which is at writerscentre.com.au/sale, so writerscentre.com.au/sale, while the sale is on, you'll find that I have organized $50 off 40 different courses. So you'll have a lot to choose from. And at $50 off, you might want to stock up because you get access to them for a year and that gives you plenty of time over the next 12 months to complete the courses. This is a great opportunity and it's only available this Easter until midnight, Thursday, the 4th of April. If you're interested in writing for, you know, like say young adults, then the course Writing Young Adult Fiction is on sale at $50 off. If you're interested in writing historical fiction, then you can't go past the wonderful course created by Pamela Freeman called Historical Fiction, because it will show you what you need to know to make sure that your novel is authentic and credible. That's also on sale for $50 off. There's literally something for everyone depending on the type of writing you're interested in. If you're a fan of the wonderful Kate Forsyth, everyone gives rave reviews about her brilliant course on creativity and the writing process. It's called Dare to Dream. That's also on sale at $50 off. If you're more into children, right, you want to write, say, humor for kids, there is Laugh Out Loud with Tim Harris, $50 off. And, you know, then if you're more of a nonfiction feature writer, I personally love the course Travel Writing, which I co-created with the brilliant travel writer Katrina Lobley. That's also $50 off. Anyway, look, I'll stop there. I can't possibly mention them all. As I said, there are around 40 courses and you will find them all on sale at writerscentre.com.au/sale until midnight Thursday the 4th of April. That's our Easter sale. Happy Easter! Now it's time to welcome Nat Newman, who is here to share with us her writing tip for this week. What's been going on in your world, Nat, before we get into that?
Nothing, I'm just in the middle of everything as per usual. So yeah, just trying to keep on top of things more than anything, Valerie. It's only March and I'm already tired.
I mean, every time I talk to you, you're always so busy, which I know. So maybe I'm going to ask you a different question this week. And kind of like rapid fire. So give me the first thing that comes to mind in a sense, but obviously, hopefully it's correct and truthful. What are you reading at the moment?
What am I reading at the moment? George Saunders, A Swim in the Pond in the Rain.
What are you watching at the moment?
I am rewatching Young Royals.
Are you serious?
It's so good. Have you watched it?
No, I've watched the trailer and I didn't find it that appealing, but maybe I'll give it a go.
Well, I mean, because I'm learning Swedish and they're just so adorable. And I'm just a sucker for a gay romance, to be honest.
Okay. What are you listening to?
Oh my God. Actually, this is a great question, Valerie. And I'm almost embarrassed to tell you, but here we go. So I realized that I don't listen to albums anymore, right? We're all slaves to the algorithm. We're just listening to whatever, Spotify dishes up. So I thought I would listen to the Rolling Stones top 500 albums of all time, and I'm listening to them in order. So
Oh my
every week
God.
I put together a playlist of 10 albums, and I listen to those 10 albums exclusively. And I've been exp I listened to Harry Styles for the first time. I listened to some Tupac for the first time, so that was interesting. And then who else have I listened to for the first time? I listened to a lot of country music, which I've just kind of confirmed I'm not a fan. But generally speaking, a lot less heavy metal than I usually do listen to.
Oh my goodness. Okay. And what food are you enjoying at the moment?
I am, because I do a lot of weightlifting, I do high protein. So for me, unfortunately, food is no longer enjoyable. Food is hitting my macros.
All
So
right. In that case, what are you indulging in at the moment? It doesn't have to be food, it could be whatever.
donuts. My
What?
every single weekend I go to the cinema to watch, whatever happens to be on, and I always get donuts. I cannot
What
walk
kind?
past
What's your favorite?
hot cinnamon. There is no
Oh,
other kind. I cannot walk
yeah.
past the donut stand without stopping and buying three. No, I think I get two donuts. And the lady always says to me, it's only six for $4. And I'm like, do not tempt me, wench.
Oh
I want my two donuts. This is it. This is the only thing I'm
God.
allowed to have all week.
All right, awesome. Let's move on to our writing tip this week then. Thanks for
Okay.
sharing that.
Right. I just wanted to talk about the perils of writing to a theme. This comes up a lot, and you probably have encountered people who, they say, "Oh, I want to write about climate change," or "I want to write about police corruption," or "I want to write about big pharma," or something like that. And but they mean like a novel, a fiction story. And that's kind of great, but it's so hard. It's so hard to write to a theme. You need to start with a character, and you need to start with a story. And more often than not, most people will start with a character that really speaks to them. And through that character and through their story, you can highlight themes. So you should always, always, always start with a character in a story. I feel like people who go into, okay, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to write 80,000 words again about, I'm going to write about climate change. Okay, great. But where do you start? So definitely, definitely, definitely try and start with a
Is it
character.
because they wanted that it's something preachy, or is it typically for the people that you encounter? Have they chosen the theme because of some, I don't know, thing that they want to, some message they want to get out in the world?
Yeah, I think it's two kinds of approaches that people end up when they're thinking about themes. So one, they want to be didactic. They want to try and preach something or teach something. And again, you can if you go into it with that strong didactic theme,
People ought to be turned off.
yeah, like they can tell straight away, and they're just like, oh, I don't want to be preached to, like it's not what I've signed up for. I've signed up to read a story. If I happen to learn something along the way, fantastic. The other side, I think, is people who have a really interesting family story to tell, but they want to cover way too much ground. So they want to cover like five generations and six different countries and five different corporations and all sorts of stuff and then side stories and cousins and uncles and God knows what else. And whilst there is a place for an epic family story, even then, you have to narrow it down to like one or two main stories and a handful of characters. You can't tell, it's not a nonfiction book. It's not a Wikipedia article. You can't cover every single piece of information. You have to just choose the story that is going to communicate, the main heart of the story.
And the biggest mistake that those people make, because I've met quite a lot of people who want to do exactly that, tell a family story, which has many, many parts and many, many, eras and many, many generations. But equally, people who want to tell, sort of like write a book about their expertise. So that is nonfiction. So they might want to write a book about their expertise in productivity or in systemizing your business or in, mental health or whatever. And the number of people, this is the single biggest mistake, the number of people I've met who think that they can get a writer and then just do a vomit, like just do a massive download and then expect and hope that the writer makes it into something.
is it's the single most inefficient way to do it, inefficient way to do it. Whereas if you actually map out some kind of structure first and work towards that, and you can stray from that structure if, you know, it transpires that it needs to go another way. But doing that brain dump is such a waste of time. And if you're a writer who has been asked by somebody to do that, do yourself a favor, you know, because you might be doing it in conjunction with the fiction that you're writing or whatever. Do yourself a favor and make sure you don't agree to it. And instead try to map out a structure first, even if that structure changes.
Yeah,
Okay.
definitely. Yeah. I've ghostwritten books for business you know, kind of thought leaders and stuff before. And yeah, we have to come up with and sometimes it'll take a little bit of pushback from me to sort of say, no, what is, you know, we can't write about all the things. You know, what is the one theme we're going to focus in on for this book? Yeah, you can do the next theme or the next whatever in the next book, but this book, what is the one thing we're focusing on here? Yeah. All
Yep, definitely. All right. Great tip. Thank you so much for your time this week, Nat.
right, thanks, Valerie.
Now let's move on to the competition this week. I have three copies of End of Story by A.J. Finn. This podcast is just the gift that keeps on giving, isn't it? So you have a chance to win one of three copies of End of Story by A.J. Finn, the number one New York Times bestselling author of the global phenomenon The Woman in the Window, which was published in, you know, more than 40 languages, is the basis of the hit film starring Amy Adams. It's just a huge success. End of Story, this is the latest novel, is a spellbinding thriller offering an intriguing experience for fans of Knives Out. Here's the blurb. I'll be dead in 3 months. Come tell my story. So writes Sebastian Trapp, reclusive mystery novelist, to his longtime correspondent Nikki Hunter, an expert in detective fiction. With mere months to live, Trapp invites Nikki to his spectacular San Francisco mansion to help draft his life story while living alongside his beautiful second wife, Diana, his wayward nephew Freddie, and his protective daughter Madeline. Soon, Nikki finds herself caught in an irresistible case of real-life detective fever. You and I might even solve an old mystery or two. 20 years earlier, on New Year's Eve 1999, Sebastian's first wife and teenage son vanished from different locations, never to be seen again. Did the perfect crime writer commit the perfect crime? And why has he emerged from seclusion 2 decades later to allow a stranger to dig into his past? Life is hard. After all, it kills you. As Nikki attempts to weave together the strands of Sebastian's life, she becomes obsessed with discovering the truth, while Madeline begins to question what her beloved father might actually know about that long ago night. And when a corpse appears in the family's koi pond, both women are shocked to find that the past isn't gone. It's just waiting. That sounds like an awesome book, and I hope one of you get to win. Well, three of you get to win one of three copies. Just go to writerscentre.com.au/win and follow the instructions. It's super easy for you to enter. That's writerscentre.com.au/win. Entries close on the 1st of April. And now, are you ready for the word of the week? Well, I hope you are. This week's word of the week, you may have heard of it before, is emollient. E-M-O-L-L-I-E-N-T. Emollient. It's an adjective meaning having the power of softening or relaxing living tissues, like a medicinal substance. It is soothing, especially to the skin. It can also be a noun for something that softens. So you might commonly find it used to describe moisturizers and things like that, but you can also use it to describe a person or an object that tries to soften a situation. And that was the word of the week. This podcast is brought to you by the Australian Writers' Centre, a world leader in writing courses. If you're serious about completing your own novel manuscript, immerse yourself in our inspiring and motivational 6-month program, Write Your Novel. Filled with weekly workshopping and practical lessons, you'll receive advice on structure, dialogue, and much more, as well as tips on publishing. The online program fits around your weekly schedule, and you'll get extensive personal feedback from your classmates and tutor throughout the program. Here's what Frances Chapman says.
I was looking for a course that would introduce me to other people who would be able to tell me if I was on the right track. And I was hoping to learn some of the essentials around structure, point of view and voice and those kind of grounding essentials for novel writing. I first enrolled in a creative writing course at the Australian Writers' Centre, and I really liked the tutor of that course. So I had another look, and she was doing a 6-month write your novel course the next year. The course was so valuable in so many ways, and this gave me an opportunity to meet other people who were going through the same kind of process. And I found some people who were willing to give me some really constructive and helpful feedback on what I was writing. The other thing that was really valuable in that course was learning some of the fundamentals of storytelling. I would highly recommend any courses at the Australian Writers' Centre. Any author can, at any stage of their career, can benefit from hearing the input of other writers.
Find out more at writerscentre.com.au/novelwriting.
Now let's move on to our writer in residence this week. Jodie Gibson is an author of feel-good women's fiction. She has been published both independently and traditionally. Her latest novel is Reinventing Emily Brown. Thanks so much for joining us today, Jodie.
Thank you so much for having me, Val.
Congratulations on your latest book, Reinventing Emily Brown. Now, this is your third novel, and you've had such an interesting journey in the various forms of publication that you've done. So just to give people a snapshot, why don't you sort of tell us the name of each novel and a very quick elevator pitch for each, just so that we can kind of place it in our brains. And then why you chose in different situations to publish indie or publish traditional. So let's start with the first one.
Okay, so my debut novel was The Memories We Hide, and that's a contemporary drama. It's sort of set in a rural setting. There's a bit of romance in there, lots of drama. And when I came to write that novel, it took me, as it does with first novels, it took me years to write and get to a standard where I was ready to pitch it. And I did pitch it to a couple of traditional publishers to start off with. And I got some full requests for the manuscript, which was great. But ultimately there was no's in the end. And during that time, while I'm waiting to hear back from the publishers, I was also researching indie publishing. So I had sort of got onto the bandwagon and I'd learned a lot about it. So after I'd got those initial no's, I thought, okay, I'm going to actually actively make a decision to independently publish this novel. So I dove straight in. It was a huge learning curve, probably did lots of things that I shouldn't have done, but definitely learned along the way. And that one was published in 2019. After I published that, or while I was publishing, I was also writing my next novel, which is more of a feel-good women's fiction novel called The 5-Year Plan. And I had absolutely 100% decided I was going to indie publish that one as well. And it was actually, I was doing, I think it was a course or a workshop through the ASA, the Australian Society of Authors, about self-publishing and also about the tie-in with traditional publishing as well. And after that, I had someone reach out to me from Booktopia because they were in that workshop, and they were talking with Brio Books and they were looking for some novels to acquire, and they actually reached out because they liked the sound of what I was working on. So I gave them a look thinking, oh yeah, you know, nothing's probably going to come of this, and then they offered me a traditional publishing deal for that book. So The 5-Year Plan, we agreed to publish that as a paperback, and I still published it myself as an ebook. So it was like a hybrid book, I guess. They did the paperback, I did the ebook. So that was a great experience to learn how traditional publishing works in relation to what I'd done previously in indie publishing. And then when I came to my third book, which is the one that's just came out in September, Reinventing Emily Brown, it's another feel-good fiction. I was planning on pitching that because I had to give them at Brio the first look at it. Which was going along fine until there's been lots of changes at Brio Books and Booktopia Publishing in the meantime, and they have decided to pull back on their publishing. So they said, look, we don't really need to have a look at it. You can do whatever you decide to do with it. And that, so I, I'm going back to indie publishing because that's what I know, that's what I enjoy. I love the control of indie publishing and I love what I can do with it. And I've learned so much along the way that I just wanted to continue down that path.
Wow. Okay. So lots of different options. Tell us first, before we continue, what is Reinventing Emily Brown about?
So Reinventing Emily Brown is about a woman in her late 30s. She's living the high life in Melbourne where she's, you know, working hard and pretending that everything's going along okay when it's really not, where she's more like a duck, you know, paddling underwater really fast, making it look all calm on top and it's not. And then one day she comes home and she finds out that her husband has gambled all of their money away. The bank is about to repossess the house and she's been just, you know, moving along blindly, pretending none of this happened. And now it's just everything's happened at once. And she finds herself and her 15-year-old daughter back at Curlew Bay, which is a sleepy little hollow on the Great Ocean Road, fictional place. And she's with her parents and she has to basically make a choice to reinvent her life. And she's thinking, well, what I've done in the past isn't working, so I'm going to totally reinvent my life and see what happens. So it's the story of how she does that and how she learns that maybe she doesn't need to reinvent her life. She just needs to accept who she is and what she wants out of life.
Did you always wanted to be a writer?
I've always been interested in character. I studied a lot of drama at school. I was in school productions and that sort of thing. I actually wanted to pursue acting, but that course sort of never came about, as things do. So I wasn't really pursuing writing. It was something that came later in life after I've had kids, you know, that traditional story of, you know, you're having kids and you have this story idea and you just start writing. And that's what I did. And as soon as I did, it was like I just found what I wanted to do. It just grew from there.
And so because you've now had experience with two indie books and can compare it to the experience of Brio books, I'd love for you to go through some of your tips for success as an indie author, because there are some people who it's such a foreign concept for them and they don't, or and either they're so daunted and overwhelmed they don't start because they think there's 1 million things to do, or they literally have no idea of the million things to do. And I find that people fall in those two camps. So, yeah, I know that you've sort of thought about this beforehand, some of your tips as an indie author. So where do you want to start on that?
So I'll start with what I think should be number one, and that's you need to figure out why you want to indie publish. And then you need to define what your success is going to look like as an indie publisher. So first of all, you need to do your research. It's all well and good to jump in blind, but it's a steep learning curve. And while you can do it that way, I really do suggest making sure that you know enough about the industry to make a decision where you've got the information and you can actually make that decision to know what you're heading into. So research, educate yourself, listen to podcasts. I know you've had some great indie authors on this podcast. Val, read articles, connect with other indie authors. There's lots of information out there. Make sure you're getting your information from a reputable source. And then weigh up what's involved and have a look at it and really make an active decision. Is this what I want to do? Can I do this? Do you have the drive and the energy and the passion?
So when you say decide what success looks like for you, what did success look like for you?
Success for me was getting readers to read my book, pretty much. I think you really need to define success for you in the way that how you will feel that validation, because when you're traditionally published, getting that contract is a real validation, whereas indie publishing, it's a bit of a different experience. So is the validation in getting readers to read your book? Is the validation in doing it all yourself and being in control of that situation? And what does that feel like? And where does success lie for you? Obviously, we'd all like to be selling millions and millions of copies, but a lot of the time that type of success is out of your control. So you really need to think about what you can control and what that success looks like for you. So for me, it was to get readers on my books, eyes on my books, and getting that feedback that they're enjoying what I'm producing and then just going from there. So I always always say to think about that and set some small goals to start with, some achievable and measurable goals, and then reevaluate as you go along that path, because success will change as you move along the journey.
What were some of your small goals? Did you quantify it in any way, or was it more like a vibe?
It was a bit of both. Like, I had with my first book, because I did dive in a little bit blind, my first goal was to get the book published and to make sure that I could actually get it out there. And then my next goal was to build my mailing list and then promote the book and actually start selling some copies. So, and I did have some quite modest goals about numbers of copies that I would sell and how I would actually produce the book. So was I going to do a paperback, a digital and an audio? So all of those little sort of goals to achieve along the way. And I think if you have those small goals along the way, when you hit them, you can really celebrate them, and that gives you a bit of drive to move forward, because there's definitely lots of lows in the industry.
Yes, great. Okay, what other tips have you got?
Number two, I would say be prepared to run a business, because as an indie author, you are running a business. You're not just writing the book and pressing publish and sending it off into the world. You are going through the editing process and being in charge of that. You'll be in charge of the cover design and then the actual publishing process, the marketing, the budgeting, the bookkeeping, all of that boring stuff that most creatives hate. But you actually need to be able to run a business and have those sort of business skills, or at least have a team behind you that can help you with those sort of things, which brings me to my next point.
Before you go on to the next point, with that, because it's so true, you need to be able to run a business. And you said earlier that people should ask themselves if they have the drive and passion to do it. Now, they may well have the drive and passion to write the book, right? But I think you mean also, do they have the drive and passion to run the whole thing like a business, because it's so much, there's so many more moving parts and there's so much more involved. So as somebody who's gone through both Indie and Brio, can you quantify in any way, or can you in percentage terms or in times terms, how much more work after, assume the book is written and it's good, you know, but how much more work is involved in the indie side of it versus when you did it with Brio?
Sure. So once you've written the book, obviously with a trad publisher, they will help you through the editing process. So you're sort of guided by them, and then they're designing the cover for you and you're approving the cover. So it's quite, you're really guided and you have someone holding your hand. Whereas if you're indie publishing at that stage, you're getting in touch with the editor, you're going through the process, you're designing the cover. So it's a lot more work involved in that side of thing. And then once it's published, I think nowadays trad publishers aren't doing as much marketing as they used to, time, resources, money, all of that sort of thing. So I think it's fairly on an even keel. But then again, as an indie author, you have to look at all of your stats, whereas a trad publisher is looking at the stats for you, they're looking at the sales figures. You need to be monitoring that sort of thing. So it is more time intensive as an indie author. And so time management, planning, and looking at all of those different moving parts is really what you need to have the skills and the time and, you know, just getting things sorted in the back of your head so you can be all over everything.
So before you did your first book, did you know all of the things involved?
I kind of did. Like, as I said, I was listening to a lot of podcasts and reading a lot of articles about indie publishing, but I don't think you truly know until you dip your toe in the water and then you go, okay, wow, yes. So I knew this was going to be a lot of work, but it's a lot more work than I thought. And then it's just a matter of just planning. Like, you've got to have time management skills and you've got to know that you've got to not only write the book and market the book, but you've got to be doing that business work on the side as well. So yeah, it is, you are running a business and there's no two ways about that, and you've got to be ready for it.
Okay, and the business part of it includes your next point, which is building your publishing team.
Yeah, so as an indie author, people might think that, you know, you're an independent, you're solo, you're doing it all yourself, which is true in one sense, but you really do need a team behind you. So you need to look at what skills that you have as a writer, obviously you can write and you enjoy writing. How good are your editing skills? Because a lot of writers aren't great editors, and there are specialised editors out there for that reason. So as an indie, I highly recommend getting a professional edit on your book, because you want to produce the best quality book that you can and the best professional product that you can. So you might need to engage an editor, you might need to engage a proofreader, a copy editor. Then do you have the skills to be able to design a cover that is going to look exactly like other books on the shelves in the bookstore? Because you want a reader not to be able to tell who published the book. Readers don't care who published the book, they just want a professional looking product. So if you don't have those skills, you're going to need to outsource those skills. You might like to have an accountant on board. You should have an accountant on board to handle all of the tax things and all of that sort of fun stuff. You might be able to do the basics yourself, but you might need your accountant on side as well. You might like a VA, a virtual assistant, to help you with a lot of the admin. And of course, this comes back to your budget, how much you can do yourself, how much you want to do yourself, what you can and can't outsource. So building that team, what you can in your budget and where your skill set lies, is really important to have that team behind you and the professional freelancers behind you to produce a product that is the best that you can produce.
So let's take Reinventing Emily Brown as an example. What sort of people, not actual names of people, but what sort of people did you have in your team? Did you mentioned an editor, a copy editor, a proofreader, someone to design the cover, a VA, accountant, sure, but, you know, that's slightly different to, that's not necessarily part of the production of the book. Sure. Did you have all of those people?
I had all of those people. Yeah. I know my skills lie in actually writing, getting the story down on the page, and my skills lie in marketing and getting the book out there. So, yes, I had a structural edit that I had an editor do with me, and we went through a couple of rounds of structural edits for that. I also had a copy editor.
Who is different to the structural editor?
Who was different, yes. You can have the same. I like to have three different editors because I like three different sets of eyes on my book. I think it's really important because you know yourself when you're reading your own book.
For sure.
You don't see the things that you should be seeing. So, so I had a structural editor, I had a copy editor, and I also had a proofreader. So there were three different people. And then I formatted the book myself. There's programs that you can learn to do that. And they're quite simple because I'm not great with technology.
And what did you use?
Vellum.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, vellum. So you can format your book in ebook or digital formats as well as a print copy. So you just upload your document there and it basically does its stuff and then you move things around. So I did the formatting myself, but I also had a professional cover designer that I work with who's actually in the UK, and he designed my cover. And he
beautiful cover. Lovely.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Very eye-catching. Great for bookstores. Yep.
Yeah, I love the pink. It just sort of fitted really
very
well.
Good.
Yeah. I had two concepts and that was the one that sort of hit me. And I thought if it's going to hit me, well, it's going to, hit other people's eyes too. So, I had that cover design professionally. And, and these are people that I have on my team that I regularly work with.
Right. And so when you say regularly work with, what do you mean? You mean you worked with them on your previous indie book? Oh, right. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. And going forward. So, you're always, you've got the book out there, you're marketing it, but you're always writing the next book.
Yes.
You're always at different stages. So I'm different stages working with editors and cover designers at different stages. And they're just part of my team. So I book them in advance because I love working with them. I know that they produce great quality and that's what I want. So I'm always booked in advance with them.
So what's your next tip?
My next tip is to build your mailing list. Now, this I think applies to both trad authors and indie authors. It's so important to have that contact with your readers. Social media is great for reaching readers and for connecting with other authors and, putting your book out there, but we could wake up tomorrow and social media could be gone. Like, probably unlikely, but if it does disappear, all of your connections are gone. So if you have a mailing list, you have a direct contact with your readers or your future readers. So it's really important. So find a mailing list provider, find, I think there's ones, MailerLite, MailChimp, there's lots of them out there. Again, what's going to work with your budget, and get a sign up link on your website, share it on your socials, just start building that mailing list. And you might decide to do a monthly newsletter, might be every 2 months. You might decide you only want to reach out when you've got a book coming out, but just make it consistent and regular. And don't think that you don't have anything to say, because readers are really interested in the publishing and the writing process. So even if it's a short, snappy newsletter, this is what I'm up to, this is what I'm working on, a little bit of personal stuff about your life. You don't have to get too personal, but just building that authentic connection with your future readers, because they're going to be your fans. So it's super important to have that mailing list behind you.
Such an important tip. Absolutely. 100%.
Yep.
What's next?
Next one is a big meaty one, Val.
Yes, go on.
You need to nail the 5 key components of your book. So number one is the story.
Yes.
Okay. So the story, your final manuscript needs to be edited, as we were talking about before, needs to be polished, and it needs to be presented in a professional format. Like I was saying before, you want that book to sit on the shelf next to a trad published book, and you want the reader to look at the book and not know that that's an indie published book, because the stigma is improving in the industry, but there is still a bit of a stigma about self-published books, that they're not as good as trad books, or they've chosen to self-publish because they couldn't get a trad deal, which is just not the case anymore. But you don't want any of that stigma. So when you're producing a book, the story has to be the best, and it just has to be a professional looking product. The next one is I think this one's often overlooked by a lot of authors, but you need to meet genre expectations.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So when a reader picks up your book, they look at it, they know if it's a crime book or a romance book, and then they have in their head a certain expectation of what that story is going to promise them. So if it's a romance, that reader knows that they're going to get a happy ever after, or a happy for now. There might be, you know, bits and pieces in between, will they, won't they, but they know in the end that that's what they're expecting. So if you're not going to deliver on that, you're going to be in a whole world of pain at the end of that book. So you really need to understand your genre and what readers expect from that genre, and make sure that your story is really nailing that.
Yeah, absolutely, because readers do have an expectation. They don't want to be disappointed, so you want them to buy your next book, so therefore don't disappoint them. Yeah, so it also means, you know, some people think that when they indie publish, I'm the boss, there are no rules, so I can do what I want with the story. And yes, technically that's correct, but if you're kind of mashing up literary fiction with a bit of rom-com with a bit of, you know, serial killer, readers get a bit discombobulated.
They do, because like they do have that expectation, and you can surprise them and you can go a little bit left of field, but they're still going to have that expectation. So it's really important that you as the author understand that first.
Yeah, great. So is that the second of the 5 key components?
That was the second. Okay, so the third one is the cover. Now, we've spoken about the cover before, how it has to be professional. It has to meet the genre expectations as well. So you want a cover that, if it's a crime novel, it looks like a crime novel. If it's a romance, it looks like a romance. If it's sci-fi, you need to have those elements on there. So that's where a professional cover designer, if you're not skilled in that area, can be a huge asset to you, because they know the industry, they know genres, they know the trends and what's currently working and not working. So you really need to nail that cover.
That is so important, because I actually met somebody who designed covers, but he wasn't designed book covers. Mm-hmm. He was not actually very experienced, and he had just sort of been employed by somebody who was churning out covers. And unfortunately, and this was in another country, so every cover, whether it was a rom-com, whether it was fantasy, whether it was crime, whether it was self-help, whether it was business, looked like a fantasy cover.
Oh, that's
and
not good.
I'm like, I didn't say anything, because I And that is not good. So choose your cover designer carefully, your graphic designer, whoever is doing your cover. There's some fantastic ones out there. So make sure you look at their stuff and make sure their stuff looks like, as Jodie said, the genre that if it's in a bookshop, it's going and it's in the right place in the bookshop, it's going to fit in really well.
Absolutely, yeah. Next, in the five key components of your book, you need a blurb that sells. So the reader's in the bookshop, they picked up the cover because it's amazing, they flip the book over, and next they're reading the blurb on the back of the book. Now, this is your sales pitch to that reader. So you really need to nail that copy. You need to have a hook there. You need to grab them and bring them into the story so that they actually want to walk out of the bookstore or they want to hit add to my cart on the computer. So it's super important to really nail that copy so that you are selling the book to your reader. Really, really important.
And your blurb is excellent.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, the fifth key component.
The fifth one is market to your reader, so your ideal reader. We'd all love everyone to buy a book. That'd be fantastic. But again, coming back to genre, there are certain people who read certain type of books and who enjoy certain types of books. For example, I write feel-good fiction. So my ideal reader is someone who wants a book that they can escape from their everyday life with, that they really get thrown into the story. They feel like they're reading something that they're enjoying, bit of romance, bit of fun, and at the end they just have that warm and fuzzy feeling. So that might be the busy mum who just wants to relax with a book, or a busy professional who on the weekend just wants to sit back and just be taken away with a book. So that's my ideal reader. For every genre there will be an ideal reader. So when you do your research and you know who is more likely to buy your book, you can market to them directly, which is really important. Now if you reach other readers as well and bring them in, fantastic, but you really want to be speaking to your readers who are more likely to buy your book, and that makes marketing so much simpler when you're designing your marketing, but also more effective.
Great. All right. Fantastic. I'm loving all these tips. What else have you got for us?
Okay, number six, we're nearly there. You need to learn, adapt, and pivot. As you know, Val, the publishing industry is always changing. It's constantly changing, development of technology. And when you're with a trad publisher, a lot of the time they're keeping on top of those things. They have a whole team who are analyzing the industry and working on data and feedback and things like that. When you're an indie, you need to be on top of all of that yourself. So you need to be keeping on top with what's happening in the industry, in the publishing side of that, things with AI, like that's the latest change in the industry that's really making its mark. So you need to be reading and just keeping on top of those things so you know what's happening, so that you're aware of what's happening, so that you can adapt and you can change what you're doing. You also need to be analysing what's working for you and what's not working, because you can change it up. That's the beauty of being indie. If you've designed a great cover and you think it's great, but it's actually not grabbing the reader's attention, you can actually redesign your cover and then get it back up there, whereas that's a bit more difficult if you're in trad situations. So
that you is really so need to true, analyzing. Right?
Yeah,
yes, it's, because sometimes it's a great like thing. When you see YouTube videos, their thumbnails, 5 days later, it's a different thumbnail, and clearly they're experimenting with the one that's going to get the click. And that is possible when you're doing an indie, especially if you're doing print on demand, whereas it's not as possible at all with traditional. Great point. I had not actually thought of that. So, thanks for sharing that.
So something to think about. And you also want to be learning from your mistakes. You will make mistakes, but that's fine. Mistakes are great because you learn from them and you do better next time. So just keeping on top of things, adapting, pivoting, and just really being in control of what's going on and being aware of what's going on.
Brilliant. Loving these tips. What else have you got?
Ready for my last one, Val?
Go on. You've packed it with information so far. This is good.
So the last one is you have to learn to love the hustle. So the publishing industry is always highs and lows. As an indie, there's lots of lows. There's some great highs as well. So you've got to learn to ride that journey for use of a better word, but you also need to be willing to push your book out there. So you need to be willing to market it. You need to get in front of people. You need to get eyes on your book. So it can be a real hustle, and you need to love that process. You need to push aside the self-doubt. You need to not procrastinate. You need to have great time management. And you really need to, I love that word hustle, because that's what it feels like, because you're really hustling to get things out there, and you're getting that balance of pushing your book and also supporting other authors and just being involved in the industry. So it's a real fine line, but you really need to love that process, and you need to have patience and persistence, and you just really need to love that part of the process.
What would you say to people who they would love to indie publish, they're really proud of their book, they think they've got it to be the best that they can be, but the thought of having to hustle makes them want to dry retch? How can you get over that, or what can you do to learn to love it?
That's why I say learn to love it, because it doesn't come naturally to a lot of people. I'm an introvert. I'm not great in big social situations. I'm not great with putting myself out there. I remember when I did my first video on Instagram, I was like, I can't believe I'm doing this. I don't want to do this. But I had to learn to maybe not love it, but I had to learn that I needed to do it. And I got better, and I'm better at speaking and in interviews now. I'm better at speaking in in-person events. So it's a learning curve. And I guess it comes back to what you want as success and how success looks for you, because you don't have to do all those things. You can simply do the work, write the book, put it out professionally, and then just write the next one. And, you know, don't do all of that extra marketing activity. So bring it back to what you see as success, but also try and push yourself out of your comfort zone as well, and just see where you land.
Wonderful. And finally, let's end with what would be, well, I would normally say what would be your top three tips, but you've just given us seven, or more than seven, actually. So what would you leave people with? It doesn't have to be three, obviously, in terms of they're on the fence now. They're thinking, which way do I go? Do I indie? Do I traditional publish? What which way do I go? What's the key thing that to help them in that decision?
That's a really tough question. I think it comes down to, I think it actually comes down to what is going to make you feel validated. Now, indie publishing, your validation comes from your self-worth of putting that book out and knowing that it's good. You don't have an editor or a publisher there to say, this is great, we're going to publish it for you. You're making that decision yourself. So you've got to have that self-worth. And then the reader, when they're reading the book, they give you feedback, they leave you a review, that's your validation. Now, if that's not going to be enough for you, and sometimes indies, you might just publish digitally, so you won't see your book on a bookshelf. It is harder to get your books into bookshelves, onto bookstores and things like that. So if you want that validation of walking into every bookshop and your book is on the shelf, perhaps pursuing a traditional publishing route is probably best for you. So work out how you feel about that. What's important to you as a published author, and how that's going to feel? I think that's probably my number one piece of advice for someone who's on the fence about indie publishing. So know that it's going to be a lot of work, but yeah, really understand where your validation is going to lie.
That is such a good answer. What is going to make you feel validated? I love that. Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. Well, I've loved chatting to you, Jodie. I could actually talk to you and ask you so many more million questions, but we're at the end of the episode. So thank you so much. Really appreciate your time, everybody. Reinventing Emily Brown by Jodie Gibson. Thank you so much for your time today, Jodie.
Thank you so much for having me, Val. It's been fun.
I hope you enjoyed my chat with Jodie. We're now at almost the end of this week's episode, and I want to leave you with this fun fact. Did you know that the novel 1984 by George Orwell originally had the working title The Last Man in Europe? Now, a title can really make a big difference. I wonder what Well, I wonder if it would have been as popular with that title, The Last Man in Europe. Incidentally, there is a book called The Last Man in Europe, which is a novel by Dennis Glover about George Orwell writing 1984. Quite meta, right? Anyway, that's your fun fact for the week. Thanks so much for joining me and for hanging out with me in your earbuds or on your smart glasses or through your speakers or in your car. It's great to go on this journey with you. Do connect with me on socials. I'm at Valerie Koo on Instagram. My personal website is at valeriekoo.com. But also definitely join the podcast listener community on Facebook. Just search for So You Want to Be a Writer podcast community and request to join. I'd love to see you in there. Thanks for listening, everyone, and I look forward to chatting to you again next time. Thanks for listening to So You Want to Be a Writer. You'll find the show notes at writercentre.com.au/podcast or sign up for our awesome and often hilarious weekly newsletter at writercentre.com.au/news, where you'll find writing resources, giveaways, competitions, and much more.